This week I got to go to New York City and see our boys, 21 Pilots, at Madison Square Garden. It was incredible. They sold it out twice. They sold out Madison Square Garden twice, two nights in a row. It was unbelievable, and had an unbelievable time with those guys. Obviously, very proud of those guys for their success, for their growth, for their impact, and just to be able to say, like, yeah, Tyler and Josh, you know, came from this church is just so cool. If you don't know that about us, several years ago, Tyler was actually a worship intern at our church, and then he sold out the Newport, and the rest is history. It's just really, really fun. We got to go with some friends, and I spent 3 days in New York City. And the thing about New York City is just so incredible is just the energy. I remember the first time that I went to New York City, I went with a buddy of mine who was going to the French embassy to get his visa to actually go overseas and be a missionary. And we went in, we stayed in Times Square. And it really is just incredible, the life. Like, when you go in there, it's just like, wow, this is nonstop, just energy. There's, you know, the city that never sleeps, right? And that's why they call it that, because in a New York minute, everything can change. It's a concrete jungle. You just keep on going. And if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. It's got a lot of life and a lot of energy. And we took the subway, and it's just amazing, right? When you're on the street level, there's a bunch of stuff happening over your head. In skyscrapers, there's a bunch of stuff happening subterranean. It's just always something going on all around you. You go up north, there's a park. It's really an amazing city for a reason. And it's just full of life. And when you're in New York, you definitely feel like, okay, there's more going on here than I can see. I can sense it at times. One time we were walking right by the park, and there was a bunch of those like grates on the ground on the sidewalk, and you could hear the subway going underneath the streets. And it's just like, man, the life here, the energy here, there's always more going on than you can see. And that is the way that life is. And today what I want to talk about is life. I want to talk about the way that it was supposed to be and the way that it got taken, it got shackles put on it, because life is not the way that it should be. There's something going on, and you can sense it, and you can feel it. And by the end of today, I want you to go, okay, so that's what that is. Because all of us in the midst of life are experiencing things that we don't quite know, but we need to frame and go, okay, that's what that is. These feelings, these experiences, these problems, this pain, that's where that plays out in terms of life. The scriptures teach us that life at the very beginning was beautiful. That life, when God created it, was very, very good. That God created the heavens and the earth and all that is on them, including humans. And after he made that, he said it was very, very good. And so when God designed earth and designed you and me, he designed it with this perfection in mind, with this growth, which with life. And the idea of life is togetherness, it's unity, it's connection. It means that we play off of each other and we grow and we blossom. And ultimately, at the very beginning of life, we had connection with this world, and the world worked the way that it was supposed to. The world functioned the way that it was supposed to. Right now we see the groanings of earthquakes and storms and the problems and tornadoes and tragedy and what they call acts of God. And that is not the way that God wanted things to be from the very beginning. He wanted it to be perfect. He wanted it to be wonderful. And we see connection in the very beginning with God. He made humans and he made us in his image. And the scriptures say that in this garden that he made, that he had this perfect unity with people. That's the way that life was supposed to be. When God created us and put us into human skin, he made us so that we could have a relationship with him. And he did that so that we would know him and rely on him, and that we would experience the goodness of God. The scriptures say that we were made in his image. So there's a connection between us and God naturally, just in the way that we're made. Every single person in here was beautifully designed to have life, to have peace around us and peace with God from the very beginning. But you and I know, just like if you're standing in a city, there's rumblings, there's stuff going on, there's good things, there's bad things, there's more going on in this life than we could understand. You and I know that life is not the way that it should be. That there are pieces of goodness that represent God's original design, but that there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of suffering. Some of you in here are experiencing tremendous pain. Some of you in here are experiencing tremendous tragedy. You've gone through it and you know, like, oh, is this life? And there's something inside of you that goes, oh, there's more to this. How do I make it through life? How do I get what God has for me? How do I solve or resolve the brokenness that's around me? Some of you, like, you feel an emptiness. You feel a void. You don't just experience it around you. You feel it inside of you. And you came here today and you are not connected with God. You don't have a relationship with God. You just walk through life and you feel like you're missing something, and you walk through life trying to find that thing that fills you up, that makes you feel connected, that makes you feel whole, that life that God designed you to have, and you don't have it. And you're wondering, like, what is the deal with life? How come things aren't blossoming all the time? Some of you look around you and you see the pain, the suffering that other people are going through. You see the choices, the life, the decisions that other people have made. And you go, man, that just cannot be the way it is. That cannot be the way God wanted it to be. And it's not. It's not. God had an original design that was perfect, where you and me walk through this planet in peace and harmony with our surroundings and walk through life with God in a relationship with him. And then something happened. And what we learn about in Romans chapter 5 is exactly what happened. And I'm going to talk about that today. The book of Romans was written to the local church in Rome from Paul. He said, I'm going to take everything I know about life, about death, about the spiritual world, and I'm gonna put it in this what has become 16 chapters, which is his magnum opus, like his best, most exhaustive piece of work in terms of communicating the truths of God. And he wrote those things to Rome, because Rome was the centerpiece of intellect. It was the centerpiece of power. It was the centerpiece of growth and sophistication and life. And it was also a centerpiece theologically. They had multiple gods. And so Paul wanted to make sure that the Romans heard the true, full, exhaustive story of who God is, what happened in this life, and where we stand before God. And so that's what he does. And in Romans chapter 5, he kind of gets to, here's how we got to the life that we're living. Here's why life is the way it is. Here's what's happening below the surface. This is what you're experiencing every day. This is the void. Life was supposed to be a certain way, and now it's like this. And he talks about that in Romans chapter 5. Now in Romans chapter 5, I'm gonna take you through it, and I'm gonna take you through a translation called The Message, which is a translation from the original text, but it's put in more common everyday language, so it's a little bit easier to understand. But if you want, you can go read this in the NIV version or the NASB or the New King James Version or whatever. But if you struggle sometimes to understand what the Bible is saying, I would recommend go open up The Message and read what it's saying. Read what maybe the NIV says, which is kind of a more typical translation that we look at a lot, and then put it next to The Message so you can go, okay, that puts some skin on what I'm trying to understand and makes it easier for me to comprehend. That's one of the reasons why I use it in something like this, because, man, what matters is we need to know what God is saying. We need to understand in our context what Paul intended the Romans to understand about the most important thing we could ever stand up, sit down, sit around in groups and talk about, and that is life. And in Romans chapter 5, he does that. And here's what Paul says. He says, you know the story of how Adam landed us in this dilemma we're in. So up until this point, he's taught that we're in a dilemma, that there's that life is not the way it should be. And he goes, you know the story. And so some of you are in here today and you don't know the story. I'm gonna give a quick overview of the story. In the beginning, it says in Genesis, the first book of the Bible, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And when he did that, over 6 days, he created earth that we know. He created the sky above us, and he created the first two humans, Adam, then Eve. He created the animals, the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky. When it says in Genesis that he created the heavens and the earth, it's believed, as we look at more parts of the Old Testament, that when he created the heavens, that he also created what you and I would call angels. That's what the scriptures teach. And before Adam and Eve are brought onto the scene in that creation story, we learn through other prophets and through other teachings that these original beings had some level of hierarchy, and there was a lead angel named Lucifer. This is what the scriptures teach us if we kind of take all the pieces and look at who Lucifer is. You might know him as Satan or the devil. He was an angel. And at some point before Adam and Eve came onto the story, he decided and was filled with some pride that made him believe that he was better than God. And so some type of fallout happened between Lucifer and God, and Lucifer was kicked out of the heavens, and apparently, according to the scriptures, a third of the angels fell and went with him. And so when Adam and Eve get on the scene in this beautiful garden, this beautiful place that God created for them, there are already beings out there that are trying to take away the goodness of life that God created. And so Adam and Eve are told, you can have this place, you can have authority over this place, and God would spend the day with him because he was connected with them in life. So they were like flourishing with the earth and creating and experiencing the fruit of the earth. And they were also experiencing the goodness that came from a connected, walking, talking relationship with God, life. But God told them, you have one rule. You have one thing you cannot do. And he made a tree and he said, you can't eat the fruit from this tree. He said, when you eat the fruit from this tree, you will die. You will die. And what happens is God is kind of off the scene for a minute. Adam and Eve end up seeing this fruit. And even though they have everything else, the scriptures say that Satan, I'm just gonna say it like it is, because when I say it out loud, it might intrigue you, or you might just think this whole thing is folklore. But here's what the scriptures teach, and here's how I view this, and it's very oversimplified. If Jesus is real and he walked on the earth and he really rose from the dead, he connects himself to the Holy Scriptures. And so I believe that everything that's written in the scriptures is true. I believe there's parts that are metaphor, but you can tell in the original language that it was intended to be metaphor. This is not, in my opinion, the book of Genesis intended to be a metaphor. It's intended to be literal. Even though it was written in a poem, it's a story about what happened. So in the book of Genesis, what we see is that the fruit was pleasing to them, and the devil in the form of a serpent comes and tempts Adam and Eve and says, you should eat of this. You should eat of this. And this is what Paul is talking about. There's a dilemma. Life was good. Life was beautiful. Then a dilemma happened. There's a problem on earth. There's a problem. There's something below the surface. Life is not the way it's supposed to be. You feel the pain. You're disconnected from God. You feel the emptiness. You feel the brokenness. The earth, your soul, your spirit, your relationships, your cravings, all of it. It's not the way it should be. This is the dilemma, and here's where it happened. They decided, and Eve decided, because it looked to be good for food, which meant it would fill her up from a physical perspective, that it would actually satisfy her hungers, that it was beautiful, that it looked up, it made her feel like, well, that's pretty, I like that, it was enticing to the eye. And God said that they shouldn't eat of it because it was the knowledge of good and evil. And ultimately, when they would eat of that, it would take them to a new level of understanding who they are. They would understand that they are broken and they would see their brokenness. Well, the devil twists that into them thinking, you're gonna be smarter and wiser if you take of this. So she tempts them and says, oh, it's good. It's good to eat. It looks good. And it's gonna make you wise. And she decides with Adam in that moment to take and eat. To take and eat. God's perfect target was do anything you want, but don't eat this. As soon as they did that, they missed the mark of God's one single intention. And in that moment, sin entered into the world. Sin is missing the mark. You missed the mark. God told you to do this. You missed it. You did the opposite. And so Paul says, you guys understand the story, right? You remember the story, the one I just told? He goes, you've heard the story. A lot of you have heard the idea. And then he goes on, he says, first sin, Adam and Eve, they sinned. And he said, and because of that sin, death, separation. The world stopped functioning the way it should. It started to trickle off into a brokenness. And your relationship with God severed. It says that then God came walking through the garden in the cool of the day. And Adam and Eve ran and hid because they knew they were sinful and they started that separation from God right then. Death. Why do I feel like in life there's brokenness? Why do I feel like I crave things I should? Why do I feel like the world doesn't function the way it should? Why? Sin and then death. That's what Paul says. You know the story. Sin came in, then death. And then he says this, and no one exempt from either sin or death. You see, in one translation that a lot of us might read if we study the Bible or you know look at the Bible more often in the NIV, it says that through one man sin entered the world, and therefore all sinned. And what that means is that when Adam sinned, his DNA changed. Sin became a part of his DNA that he would then, as the first human, pass along to every single human that would exist on the planet from that time forward. This chromosome of sin means that we are all born into death, separation. That we're gonna be born, we're gonna grow, but eventually we're gonna wear out. We all have a battery. Before that, there was no battery. It was just life. It was just constant. Literally in New York City, we're driving around. You know what the most important thing was? I don't know how much battery life. Battery life. Can you imagine just having a phone that never runs out? That's the way life was supposed to be. Man, I just keep going and keep going and keep going and going. Well, as soon as sin came into the world, death, it's not working the way it is. Our battery went away to a battery that needs to be solved and fixed and fixed and fixed and eventually it's just gonna run out. So here's the thing. Some of you might go like, you know, I don't feel like I'm that big of a sinner. And that's true. Some of us in here don't do a lot of horrible things. But you're not exempt from sin because you were born into it. You're in the family of sin. You're in the family of death. Because one man sinned and it entered into everything. And every single person has this problem now of death. Every single one of us. He goes on and he says this. He says, that sin disturbed relations with God in everything and every single one. Everything around us and every single one of us have the problem of sin and the problem of death. He goes on, he says this, but the extent of that disturbance was not clear until God spelled it out in detail for Moses. So here's what Moses and the law is all about. The scriptures teach us that the law is a schoolmaster or a teacher or a coach in a sense. And what it does is it sets up a line. It says, here's how you should behave. And as soon as you step over the line, it's like, see, you're a sinner. So from the time of, from Adam to Moses, they had sin in their DNA, but it wasn't quite articulated for them in terms of how bad their sin really was until God goes, okay, you wanna know how bad this is? Here's a law. Try to do all these things. And when you don't, you'll realize, man, we need forgiven. We need forgiven. So with the law, he brings this system of forgiveness. See, you break a law, then you have to kill an animal to wipe away that sin. They did that for thousands of years, and then eventually Jesus became the lamb that wiped away the sin. And the law showed them, I'm a sinner. So some of you are going, well, I don't really break a lot of laws. Like, I haven't murdered anybody. I haven't, like, you know, I haven't committed adultery. I haven't. And Jesus comes onto the scene because there were some people that were just like that, that took the law and they said, we don't break the law. We do everything the law says. And in fact, they added laws to God's laws. It's called hedging the law a couple hundred years before Jesus came. And these people walked around thinking, we're really good. We don't even break our own laws, let alone God's laws. And then Jesus hits them right between the eyes. He hits you and me right between the eyes. He says, you haven't committed murder? If you look on your brother with hate, you have. And so ultimately, the beginning of the story with Adam and Eve and all of their ancestors who have a sin problem at a DNA level is just exposed through the law. And then we try to take the law sinfully and justify ourselves. And God says, it's a heart condition. You're a sinner. Death is in you. Death is all around you. You can't obey the law and fix death. The law shows you how clearly you are broken. Oh, you did it right? It's a heart condition. What this does is it basically leaves no one out. Everybody in here had this thing of life that we were supposed to experience, and then it got taken away with sin and death. So death, this huge abyss separating us from God, death, dominated the landscape from Adam to Moses in the DNA sense, in the way that we are, in the way that we're born, the way that we live, the way that we act, the way that we think, the way the world is. Death dominated. Even those who didn't sin precisely because it wasn't written down as Adam did, because he was the one that had the rule. He's the only one that had the rule. He precisely sinned. Generally, everybody sinned. Adam did by disobeying a specific command of God, still had to experience this. Every single one of us, even if we think we don't break specific laws, just like the people before the law or us after the law, experience this one thing, and it's this: termination of life. Termination of life. Do you understand? It is so critical. It's apropos that it's raining, that it's cloudy today, because this is a dark message. We start off with the beauty of God's intention and we move to termination of life. Every single one of us in here are experiencing every second sin and death, the termination of life, which means separation from God and brokenness in the world, this separation from God. You see, before death can be arrested, we have to understand that when sin entered into the world, that life was arrested. Life was arrested. Life got put into prison. Life is not the way it should be. And we experience it every day. When Adam and Eve turned their back on God and did the thing that they thought felt good, looked good, and made them think more of themselves than they should. In that moment, life got picked up and it got trashed, just completely trashed. Life has been arrested. And so for every single one of us, this is our experience right now. God wanted to have a full, blossoming, wonderful relationship with him. We don't have that. God wanted the earth to be beautiful and plentiful and us to experience joy, us to experience fun and laughter and happiness and good sleep and good time awake and swimming and the earth. The whole thing was supposed to be wonderful. And we have pieces of that that exist, but ultimately life, because of sin, got thrown in the trash. Life was arrested. All of us are in this room right now, and we look at this, and I want this to be a picture for the rest of our lives of the way things are without God intervening. You see, before we can get all jacked up about what Jesus did, we have to understand why he did it. It's not just a story of Jesus dying on the cross and taking death and putting it in a prison. It's a story of resurrection. It's a story of redemption. It's a story of regeneration. It's a story of freedom. It's a story of bringing things back to the way that they were supposed to be. Life was life. Sin entered and put life in the prison. And man, we're in trouble. Because this represents total separation from the world that God wanted us to have and total separation from God. Sin arrested life and put it in a prison. And it's stuck in there unless something happens. And some of you look at that and you need more. And what the Bible does is it gives us illustrations of the proof that sin arrested life. Because it wasn't just that sin got thrown into prison. It's that death started to roam the streets. That the proof of life being in prison also had a reciprocal effect of death teeming throughout the world. And all of us experience it. You see, so many of us in our lives actually are living out death more than life, because you can't experience life until you experience Jesus, because Jesus is the resurrection and the life. So in your life, which means your heart is beating, you are not experiencing life. You are experiencing death. Separation from God, separation from this world, separation, brokenness, sin. Your life without Jesus is more of a death than anything. And ultimately, it's just headed towards eternal separation from God. Right now, it's temporary separation from God. Because without Jesus, with sin, life was arrested. Isn't that sad? It's not the way it should be. Ultimately, with DNA, with the way that we are, with the way things are, here's what death kind of left on the street. Death kind of made every single one of us, and you can see like death's progress generally in every single one of our experiences as we walk through life. And the first one is just, we're all the Hulk. This is the proof. You see, every single one of us, we're riddled with death. And generally, we are people that kind of exhibit God's fingerprint. That's just Bruce Banner. Just normal every day. Well, that looks pretty good. And then you press a button. Whoop! Watch out, man. Every single one of us are the Hulk. We're not supposed to be this way. And the sin that reigns in our body because of this death that we're experiencing is powerful. It's super strong. And we spend our entire lives trying to fill the void that only true relationship with God can in this death. We're all the Hulk. Can you tell I have a 6-year-old? I literally said, I'm gonna do some illustrations and I'm just gonna go in the toy room. Everyone is the Hulk. And then one of the followers, the closest followers of Jesus, John, he kind of said this thing. He said, don't love the world for all that is in the world. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life. And what you see is that those three things are evidence of this death. Because sin not only arrested life and it like reigns in us, it arrests life every single day through those three things. Every single day, you can feel this reality. Life got arrested, and from it, death pours into the world. Allow me to illustrate. The first thing, and again, is flesh. These right here are Wolverine hands. And this is what happens with immorality. Immorality, oh, come on, fingers. Come on, fingers. Come on. Come on. Come on, Logan. Come on, Wolverine. What happens in every single one of us is we have this craving that happens. And it's not for food or water. It's for something that goes beyond. It's for this fleshly need that some, for some reason, we feel it so intensely deep inside in our gut that it kind of, it makes us well up and it makes us freak out and we go, I gotta have that. It's called immorality. It's moving outside of the natural and healthy cravings that God desired us to have. It's one thing to have a craving, but it's another thing for your craving to have you. And that's what it means when you know that, life was arrested, when you live your life going, I have to experience that. I have to. I don't feel alive unless I have sex. I don't feel alive unless I have those drugs. I don't feel alive unless I go on that experience of a roller coaster that sends something through my brain that makes me feel this emptiness temporarily filled. And every single one of us, the proof of life being in prison is this. I gotta have it. I gotta feel it in my body. So you can know that sin and death is running rampant when you start to go, man, I feel a craving that is seemingly unquenchable. You know that you fill it up, you try it, and then you still feel like you want more. And then you try it and you still feel like you want more. And then you go and you go and you go and you go and you still feel like you want more and you just get angry and you just never get full and you want it, want it, want it. It's the proof. It's the proof that life was arrested. The lust of the flesh. Then he says the lust of the eyes. Something beautiful, which is materialism. You see, the lust of the flesh is proof that life is arrested. The lust of the eyes is proof that life was arrested, and it's this idea that, man, I see that thing and I gotta have that thing. I gotta just like have it. I gotta get my hands on it. You're that pig that sees something and absolutely has to have it. If you ever in your life, until you've had God readjust your cravings through the power of the gift of God and the Holy Spirit, then you look at certain things and you think something like this: I want that. I wanna own that. I have to own that. And every time that happens, you need to remember this right here. Man, I should never want something that much. What's scary is what people will do to get that thing. They will be filled with so much materialism that they will step over, they will hurt relationships, they will break down connections, they will bring disunity to families and everything just to get that thing. And when you see that materialism is winning the day, you know life was arrested. I mean, even if we have this understanding that life is not the way it's supposed to be, that life has been arrested, that the flesh is dominating, that the pig wants more, even if we experience all that and we know that that is true, there are times when we see stuff and it still overwhelms us. I know that one of the signals for life being arrested and things not being the way they should be is when I desire things more than I feel like I should desire them. Like, for example, when we were in New York, I was with a really good friend who's like a big boss in one of the huge companies in New York City. And we flew in there and then we had a Cadillac Escalade extended version pick us up and drive us all over New York. Let me just tell you, that's the way to go through New York. And I was in there and I was thinking like, I really want to only drive around in this air-conditioned Escalade in New York. And then the next 2 days, during the hottest days in the history of New York, I took the subway. And when I was on the subway, I was like, man, that Escalade looks really good. I want that. And in my mind, I'm going, why do I want? Do you understand that life with God in the world that it was supposed to be was to leave you without heavy desire? This fleshly desire, this materialistic desire that we all have, that house, whatever that thing is, that bike, that job, those clothes, whatever that is a signal, bah, bah, life has been arrested. You should not want it that much. Death has entered in. Do not love the world for all that is in the world. The lust of the flesh, Wolverine. The lust of the eyes, the piggy bank. And he goes on and he says, the boastful pride of life, and pride is Jenga. FYI. Because what Jenga is it's all about building a tower. It's all about building yourself up and then trying to exist with as little as possible. Because from the very beginning, pride tempted Adam and Eve into saying, you don't need God. You don't need him to survive. You can do it on your own. And so anytime you live a life where you are going, I'm just going to do it on my own. Anytime you are going, I'm just going to figure this out. Me, me, me. What you're doing is you're building up this reality and you're trying to exist without God. How many of you have spent your life going, I don't need nobody. I don't need help. I'm good all by myself. You see, what happens is then the world attacks you and you feel like you don't have support, which is not the way it's supposed to be with those that understand the gift of God. But then you start protecting yourself and then you're building yourself all up by yourself and you're removing pieces from your life because all you want is you and you want it your way all the time. And that's called pride. And the scriptures actually say pride comes before the fall. And so if you try to exist without God and be your own God and do what you think and figure it all out for yourself and show no humility, then you're removing God from your life and eventually you will crumble. It comes before the fall. Jenga, Wolverine, piggy bank, these things say to every single one of us, life was arrested, man. This beauty, this connection, this is not the way it's supposed to be. You're not supposed to go through your life with insatiable cravings. You're not supposed to go through your life with, I've got to have it. You're not supposed to go through your life thinking I'm going to do it alone. You're supposed to go through your life saying, oh, God has filled my desires. God has given me everything I want and I need God and I'm thankful I have him and I have everything when I have God. But that was thrown in the trash. It's in prison. You have to feel the weight of life being arrested. We have to mourn. We have to be broken. When your family has someone diagnosed, you have to remember life was arrested. When a relationship breaks up and your parents get divorced, you have to remember life was arrested. When your hopes and dreams shatter before your eyes, life was arrested. When you feel an insatiable desire to fill a craving, life was arresting. When you are captured by something that you get and it doesn't fill you like you thought it would, life was arrested. It's not the way it was supposed to be. Sin, death, no one exempt. What does all this mean? All of this means, all of this pushes us towards a beautiful thing called faith, reliance, dependence. What does it mean? C.S. Lewis, one of the greatest authors of the past 150 years, greatest theologians, he basically broke down his whole argument for the existence of God into three different sections, and one of them was an argument from desire. What does desire mean? A man's longing for meaning and transcendence in life is best explained as a pointer to God, to the reality of the unseen world. You and me spend our lives trying to find meaning. And we go towards desire, the things that we think should fill us up, to fill us with meaning. And ultimately, all that does is show us none of that's going to fill me up. Actually, that's a sign of this, and I need something more. I need something more. If you're in here today and you feel like you need something more, you're in good company. If you're in here today and you feel like Wolverine is dominating your life, you're in good company. If you're in here today and you feel like your life is being run by the piggy bank, you're in good company. If your world is about to fall, you're in good company because no one's exempt. Life was arrested and we all need resurrection. Over the next 2 weeks, we're going to talk about that. Let me pray for you. God, this is the picture. A little bit of what was, but ultimately what is. Without you. Help every single one of us to see our desires and cravings as a signal pointing to how much we need you and how much you have to offer us. The things we spend our lives chasing, we can't even attain. And you, in a breath, can resolve it all. Life was arrested. Jesus, I'm reminded of how you came to this earth. You lived a perfect life. And the night you were with your followers, you were arrested. You were taken away. You were put in chains. All that is good was beaten. All that is good was put to death. Life was put to death. Take us there. In Jesus' name.